My guest at this time is Joseph Grabowski. He is Director of Communications at the National Organization for Marriage. Towards the end of this past week, two different episodes beg the question as to whether traditional Christian beliefs can be tolerated in public service or the public square. The episodes include an odd exchange between New Jersey Senator Cory Booker and Secretary of State nominee Mike Pompeo, and a New Yorker column expressing horror that Chick-fil-A exists in New York City and is doing well there. And Joseph, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, let's start with the episode up on Capitol Hill Thursday. This was in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Mike Pompeo is the president's choice to be Secretary of State. Cory Booker, a Democrat from New Jersey, is a member of that committee. So obviously he has the opportunity to question Pompeo. And despite a myriad of potential diplomatic questions he could ask him, he went in this direction. And here's the exchange that lasted about a minute.
You said in a speech that mourning an America that endorses perversion and calls it an alternative lifestyle, those are your words, is being gay a perversion?
Senator, I when I was a politician, I had a very clear view on whether it was appropriate for two same-sex persons to marry. I stand by that.
So you do not believe it's appropriate for two gay people to marry?
Senator, I continue to hold that view. It's the same view.
And so people in the State Department, I met some in Africa, that are married under your leadership, you do not believe that that should be allowed?
Senator, I believe it's the case. We have married gay couples at the CIA. You should know. I treated them with the exact same set of rights.
Do you believe that gay sex is a perversion? Yes or no?
Senator,
Do you believe that gay sex is a perversion? Because it's what you said here,
Senator,
in one of your speeches. Yes or no? Do you believe gay sex is a perversion?
Senator, I'm going to give you the same answer I just gave you previously. My respect for every individual, regardless of their sexual orientation, is the same.
So, Joseph, what do you see as the implication from Booker here? He says it's about State Department employees being treated well, but what's your takeaway?
Well, I think that's a completely spurious thing for him to claim, given the tone of that interview and the clear implication that he was making, that somehow this view that Mr. Pompeo holds as a matter of personal belief, as a matter of religious conviction, disqualifies him from public service. And I would point out to Senator Booker that in the past, for example, when Barack Obama first ran for public office or when Hillary Clinton was an active senator, they both held the view that marriage is the union of a man and a woman, and they were not disqualified on the grounds of that from becoming the nominee of their party. They, of course, later famously evolved, quote unquote, on the issue. But I think this is just a demonstration of an ideological purity test that unfortunately is becoming common in the Democratic Party. We've already seen it on the life issue and the issue of a woman's so-called right to have an abortion. And now we're seeing it also with respect to beliefs about marriage that people hold personally. And as you point out, the proof is in the pudding. You know, I would look to Mr. Pompeo's conduct as the director at the CIA and his conduct in other roles that he's held in a public capacity and determine from that whether or not there have ever been complaints against him, whether or not there have ever been allegations of some kind of unfair or discriminatory treatment. It's clear to me that Senator Booker doesn't have any such evidence, and that's why he's pursuing this line of questioning about something that he said in remarks that he made years ago.
Joseph, it's not even been 3 years since the Supreme Court's decision on marriage, yet in addition to episodes like this, we also have seen the legal fights that are now at the Supreme Court over whether vendors are required to create cakes, floral arrangements, or other things for same-sex ceremonies. How aggressive is this push to remove it support for traditional marriage or basic Christian teachings out of the public square?
I think it's quite aggressive indeed. And I think, you know, the adage of live and let live, which was claimed as, you know, the policy that was underlying the effort to allow for same-sex marriage is clearly not the intent here. It's not the intent to simply have something recognized by law, but to shift the culture and to really make this kind of point of view of that traditional faith-based Christians and members of other faiths as well believe about marriage, and the majority of humankind has always believed about marriage, to make that the equivalent in the civic discourse of what racists in the Jim Crow South years ago believed. That's really kind of the push that we're seeing from our cultural elites, whether it be in Washington and Hollywood or in the academy, to paint traditionally minded Christians and others, other people of faith in this country out to be bigots and haters.
Richard Nixon talked years ago about the silent majority. By looking at the opinion polls, I'm not so sure that traditional marriage supporters are the majority anymore, even maybe even within the Republican Party, but they certainly are silenced. Is that a result of the blowback they're going to get for expressing that? Is it because a lot of people who support traditional marriage don't consider it something they feel strongly enough to speak out on? Why don't we see more of a robust condemnation of this type of speech suppression?
Well, I think it's because of what we've already said, that it does become very uncomfortable, and it can put someone in danger of losing their job or of other kinds of reprisals from the government, and also just uncomfortable in their social circles to be viewed as some kind of Neanderthal with backwards views. It's very unfortunate the way that stigma has been attached to holding this basic belief in the right of a child to have a loving mother and father, for example. I would question the fact as to whether the majority actually has shifted so much, or whether, for example, people are just intimidated, even when speaking to an anonymous pollster over the phone, to admit that they believe in this, given the kind of blowback we've seen prominent people get when they come out in favor of this view.
Let's talk about Chick-fil-A now, and this is a column that just appeared at week's end in the New Yorker, and it goes on for a number of pages, but here's some of the highlights, if you want to call them that. New York has taken to Chick-fil-A. One of the Manhattan locations estimates that it sells a sandwich every 6 seconds, and the company has announced plans to open as many as a dozen more storefronts in the city. And yet the brand's arrival here feels like an infiltration, in no small part because of its pervasive Christian traditionalism. Its headquarters in Atlanta is adorned with Bible verses and a statue of Jesus washing a disciple's feet. Its stores close on Sundays. Its CEO, Dan Cathy, has been accused of bigotry for using the company's charitable wing to fund anti-gay causes, including groups that oppose same-sex marriage. Later on, it says the restaurant's corporate purpose still begins with the words to glorify God, and that proselytism thrums below the surface of the Fulton Street restaurant, which has the ersatz homespun ambiance of a megachurch. And finally, it says there's something especially distasteful about Chick-fil-A, which has sought to portray itself as better than other fast food, cleaner, gentler, and more ethical, with its poultry slightly healthier than the mystery meat of burgers. Its politics, its decor, and its commercial evangelical messaging are inflected with this suburban piety. Chick-fil-A obviously has been a flashpoint in a number of different ways over the years, Joseph. They don't advertise their political positions inside the restaurants, other than perhaps how they treat people. What do you make of this visceral kind of reaction to a chicken restaurant?
Well, there's two things that I would point out instantly that jumped out at me from that reading. And the first is the name of the publication, The New Yorker, and also the phrase suburban piety. You know, this I mentioned in my previous remarks about elitism, and I think that this is the kind of elitism that we see every election cycle when people complain sometimes about the values of certain coastal elites who miss out on the real values of the average American. This is a perfect example of that. You know, in a city like New York, when you can walk down any given street and see several stories high billboard portraying, you know, people barely clad in, you know, scampy underwear, engaged in all kinds of weird poses, to be offended by something like a homely restaurant is just completely absurd to me.
So how do you fight back? What does your organization do if the silent possible majority is afraid of speaking out? How does it ever change? How do you get at least to the point of defending free speech, if not, you know, going back to some of the core fights inside the marriage debate itself?
Well, it begins simply by spreading the word. You know, not a lot of people watch C-SPAN, and so not a lot of people were aware of this outrageous line of questioning that took place during the hearing yesterday. And so we've been spreading that to our supporters and also telling them to sign a petition that we've launched and a new website. It's called BookerBannsBelievers.com. You know, trying to highlight the fact that if Senator Booker had his way, there would be some kind of religious ideology test or a litmus test before somebody could serve in public office, unless they absolutely get on board with all of the values of sexual progressives. And so spreading the word and trying to get the word out there about just really how insidious and widespread this agenda is, but also just encouraging people that they're not alone. You know, NOM has countless supporters across the country. We've been around since the Proposition 8 battle in California, and we've stuck around, and that's because there is a grassroots groundswell of support for this issue. You don't see it reported a lot. You don't see it on the news, but that doesn't mean you're alone. So I would just encourage people to take heart and to, you know that there is strength in numbers, and to know that we have the truth on our side, and ultimately that will win out.
Joseph, we'll have to call time there. Thank you, sir, very much for your time today.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Joseph Grabowski, Director of Communications at the National Organization for Marriage. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.